An organization charged with the task of preserving history in the region faces some significant obstacles in its work. One major obstacle, really, and that's money. The Southern Oregon Historical Society used to have a regular income through property taxes, but state law and a move by Jackson County shut down that revenue stream years ago. And the Historical Society has had to cut and cut and cut for years now. Let's get an update on the current state of affairs and a look to what might happen next. Doug McGarvey is the president of the Southern Oregon Historical Society Board of Trustees in the studio with me. Doug, good to see you.
Yes, Doug. McGarvey.
Sorry. Okay. And Alice Mullally is with us as well. She's been a volunteer with SOHS for 28 years now, and you might recognize the name because she has also written many episodes of As It Was, which airs at the end of the Jefferson Exchange second hour every day. Alice, good to see you.
Thank you.
Since you have the long-term perspective, give us a sense of what you've seen happen in your nearly three decades at the Society.
When I was first at the Southern Oregon Historical Society as a volunteer, there were nearly 40 employees, and it was one of the most professional organizations for historical preservation in the country. Slowly, that number dwindled until we are now becoming a volunteer organization. Though it's been slow enough that there have been volunteers taking more and more roles regularly in recent years. And so we're just moving into that direction.
So it seems like at one time when there was still property tax money coming in that there were, I don't know, somewhere around 20, I thought, paid staff, Doug McGarvey. Does that sound about right?
Yeah. When the money was basically cut off, there was I was not on the board at that time, but it was still a significant organization in terms of paid staff. I worked at the county at the time. I was county attorney, and so they were talking to us at that point with realizing that, you know, we've got responsibilities to our employees and trying to get money for them at that point.
So as a former employee of the county, you must have an interesting perspective on this because, you know, the county certainly got painted as the bad guy a lot by the Historical Society because under state law with measures 47 and 50, you could roll a bunch of disparate countywide tax levies, as I understand it,
That's correct.
So the county ended up absorbing what was money that was supposed to go to the Historical Society.
That was a state law, and it was a reality that was just basically something that everyone was facing. It took a couple of years for it. The county was doing some of its responsibility towards the Southern Oregon Society by just saying, okay, you had this levy before, we'll continue to do that and honor that. But at some point, policies changed, people changed, and at some point they just said, we can't continue to do that. They didn't really want to be the bad guy. They were looking at other at other priorities in their minds is what those other priorities were. I always was tendered towards the Southern Oregon Historical Society, but at the same time, it's not something that, of course, as an attorney, it didn't matter. You know, I can't make my policy decisions like that.
So as the property tax money stopped coming to the Historical Society, there were grants from the county, weren't there?
There were agreements between the county and the society as to different buildings they had, but those buildings and giving up interest, there was exchanges of money and exchanges of, you know, what was equity, kind of sweat equity and those type of things. But there was some formulations for how they were going to be paid. But at some point we were, as they say, kind of eating the seed corner. We were selling off things, selling off interests, and at each point we were just one less, you know, item that we could rely upon for paying staff and keeping up overhead.
So, Alice Mullally, to come back to you with the long-term perspective, I mean, when you came in 28 years ago, what was the Historical Society owning, managing, running, and what is it doing now?
At that time, we had, maybe six or eight properties in Jacksonville that the county owned that we were managing.
Mm-hmm.
We had our collection in the Beekman House and the Beekman Bank, which we still do have, though we don't manage the buildings anymore. We had Hanley Farm starting in 1982. A collections building in White City, and the History Center in Medford, which at that time was a, or shortly thereafter, was a museum. We had the whole building as a museum.
Mm-hmm. And what has the History Center is, you, there's still a presence in there, isn't there?
Yes, the research library is still there.
Mm-hmm.
And we are going to be open from Wednesday through Friday, noon to 4, starting February 1st, with all volunteers.
What's is there a current schedule now, or is it just not open?
It's just not open until the 1st. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
All right. We're talking about the fate of the Southern Oregon Historical Society, which has gone through some rather significant financial changes over the recent years. And we haven't yet to talk about the fact that there was a levy that would have created a historical district in November, actually the creation of a district with a levy, which went down to defeat. From Jackson County voters, our guests are Doug McGeary, the president of the Southern Oregon Historical Society Board of Trustees, and Alice Mullally, who's been a volunteer for nearly three decades. Thoughts about this, questions, comments about the process that has happened so far and what's likely to happen ahead? 800-838-3760 to join this conversation by phone, to join by email. It's jx@jeffnet.org. Doug, I talked to, I think, a predecessor of yours on the board a couple of years ago and asked about the fundraising muscle, and that person indicated there really wasn't one. I mean, the Historical Society having a funding base from property taxes didn't really have a developed sort of system for going out to get donations. Is there more of one now?
That is what precisely we're starting to create. We're starting to have to rebuild or really kind of raise the structure of the society and then start over again with a volunteer-based run operation. And that is one of the most important things for our members and committee to come together with these is how do we fund this asset, because it's huge. It's gigantic, as Alice has said, and it's probably the second largest next to Portland's or the Salem, the north end of the state. So so how do we fund this? And so those are the kinds of organizing volunteers and getting people to direct their focus on different methods of raising funds, whether it's grant writing. I mean, you just normally paid staff does those kinds of things, or at least organizes those things. So we're going to have to figure out how to train people to do those types of things. We're going to have to, we're looking for how do we engender people to do endowments. And just what are all those kinds methods are there out there that we could use to do fundraising, and it's not something that we really were kind of trying to do, but with a small staff and a small kind of was not really developed. I didn't see it being developed when I was on the board as well as we could have, given we were just trying to, trying to just make the next. The next electric bill, you know, those types of things. So I think we really need to kind of work that direction.
The idea for the levy and the district creation was to basically encompass all of Jackson County in a historic district. Is that right? Which
yes.
Would have provided money for SOHS, and there was another entity in there too, wasn't there?
15 smaller historical societies.
Oh, like the Talent Historical Society.
Correct.
And the Jacksonville
Phoenix.
Heritage, all that, yeah,
right.
All that stuff.
Yeah, and that was that we were going to hopefully we were that was our plan was to be able to rely upon at least that fund that we would receive from that to at least pay again the electric bill and kind of give us some breathing space so that we could then start developing programs beyond funding programs for that matter beyond what just the levy, but you know, Alice, you've been involved quite a bit or thinking quite a bit about how to fund the program.
I have, and there are lots of possibilities. I think what excites me the most about the changes that we're making and looking at is, first of all, that we have broadened the number of people involved in those decisions. And I was telling Doug earlier, a few days ago, I picked some twigs from the garden and put them on the table for my granddaughter to see that if you wait for a while and you take care of them, as of yesterday, we now have forsythia blossoms.
Huh.
And I see the same kind of thing happening at the Historical Society. We have a wonderful volunteer corps. We have 75 regular volunteers. And these people are coming up to do things like type in the membership names. I mean, it's just little things to running major programs. And so as we bring these people together, I think we're going to see the Historical Society bloom.
Let me stick with the garden analogy, because it has been rather a long, cold winter for the Historical Society up to this point. So I wonder how this many people have managed to keep morale up at a time when paid staff is just disappearing.
I think it's because the programs that we've been putting on have been so well received by the public. Children's Heritage Fair sees 700 fourth graders come to culminate their study of Oregon history, and watching them do the laundry on a washboard and run the clothes through the wringer. They just love being out at Hanley Farm and doing all those chores, things you wouldn't expect. And we have lots of those programs, a scarecrow festival, a haunted field play every year. And we do a lot of these things in conjunction with other organizations. So, for example, we have a living history program that we do with the Cascade Civil War Society, and library programs that we coordinate with the Genealogical Society. There's just lots of things going on. Our As It Was program with JPR.
Mm-hmm. We just heard at the end of the exchange every day.
That's right.
And we hear your name just about every day.
Yeah. Well, and that's kind of the inspiring part. There's stories, and people love to hear stories, and that is what people are drawn to. And I think from my angle, or what we're trying to do from the board end of things, is we have to now, where once we were a publicly funded paid director and staff oriented or model of a corporation, a nonprofit corporation, we are now having to turn that into a volunteer coordinated operation. And I think that anyone who's ever been in a volunteer groups and been their churches or whatever they do, you know, it ends up being one or two people that end up doing a lot of the work. And that is something in which you can't continue that kind of model. If you're going to rely on that, you have to kind of design your and this is the kind of the legal end of my part of it, but you have to design this program or this operation organization into something in which you can coordinate all those volunteers, make sure that the work is spread out, that people are not repeating other people's work, that they're administered from some centralized focus, so that we have all these different programs and still be able to generate money, be able to do budgets, be able to essentially communicate back and forth. And I think one of the nice things, as Alice was just saying, is that with this new kind of model, I think you'll see something that's not so much a board that's separated from the organization, but a board that's much more involved in the organization. At least that's my vision. Board that's much more involved in the organization, much more volunteer oriented towards, and directors that speak to them are volunteers. And so there will be, I believe, a much better communication between the membership of our society and to those who are actually doing the work and operating, and members would more likely be involved as volunteers. So it's kind of how do you organize something that was once so reliant upon a kind of a traditional model, and now trying to make it accessible and doable and you know, fun, so that when a volunteer comes, it's kind of like, well, hang on there, we'll see what we can do for you, as opposed to, no, here, you come here, we've got something for you right now, you can do this. And people like to be directed, and if they're going to volunteer, I think that that's the kind of model that we need to have in order to do, and that's what we're working on right now, building.
We're talking about the Southern Oregon Historical Society with Doug McGeary, the president of the Board of Trustees, and volunteer Alice Mullally. There's a lot of stuff. Any historical society's got lots of artifacts,
yes.
Things like Peter Britt's cameras. And so so is all that stuff just sitting in storage out in White City and some at the History Center in Medford?
Some of it is in, well, a large part of it is in White City, but we do have part of the collection at the Beekman House, at the Beekman Bank, all of Hanley Farm and the house and all of the belongings in the house are all part of the artifact collection. And we do have nearly a million artifacts. It is considered the second largest collection in Oregon. It is a fabulous regional history collection. It's just really unbelievable.
But which nobody's really been able to see much of for several years now.
Well,
right?
We have traveling exhibits, and that's being expanded. Mm-hmm. We don't have a curatorial staff, and that's going to make it very difficult to do this until we can develop enough volunteer and trained staff to put on bigger exhibits.
Yeah, that's the key. When you have, like, for instance, paid staff, typically you can hire people according to their expertise as to what they do, and just being a museum curator is not just I've got a box here and there's a bunch of stuff and I know how to organize it. There is an incredible amount of work, and all you have to do is talk to those who've been doing it, and they'll tell you, well, no, it's not so simple as just giving someone, loaning out an object. You have to do all these different procedures, and that's just to loan it out. But to take it in, to preserve it, to categorize it, to catalog it, and to do and to maintain it. Those are all areas in which someone who has expertise or who is trained. And so now it's a matter of, we would love to be able to just, you know, bring people into the warehouse, but it's not as simple as that.
No, I understand that. So a couple seconds left here. Do you have any major events coming up in the way of fundraisers or volunteer trainings or anything else the public should know about?
We have a Hanley Farm cleanup April 1st, mm-hmm. and that's going to be, believe it or not, a membership activity, which is lots of fun. You work together with people and have a big meal together. So,
all right, April 1st, Hanley Farm, the cleanup day. Other things can be found at the Historical Society website, sohs.org. Doug McGeary is the president of the Board of Trustees. Ellis Mullally, a volunteer for 28 years now. Congratulations on your longevity, and best of luck in the future. Thanks for joining us on The Exchange today.
Thank you.
Thank you, Jack.